Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the value in art that offends? We've grown accustomed to works in which artists and their patrons deliberately seek to push buttons of their audience. But the issues can be very different and far more vexing when a piece intended to please everyone is viewed instead as a mocking reminder of epic suffering. That's the case in El Paso, the impoverished border city that hired sculptor John Hauser to craft a 36-foot statue of conquistador Juan de Oñate. Credited with spreading Spanish culture and Catholicism to large areas of New Mexico and Texas, the presence of Oñate and his cadre of soldiers and colonists spelled doom for Indian tribes who had lived in the region for centuries before the Spanish crown made them strangers in their own land. The film The Last Conquistador chronicles the excruciating and oddly unanticipated arguments over the monument's construction. The documentary airs as a POV special on KERA television next Tuesday night, July 15th at 9, and director John Valadez is here to talk about it. John, welcome to Think.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here.
Can you start with a little background for us on Juan de Oñate? He was Mexican-born but a Spanish citizen.
He came from Zacatecas, which is a mining town in northern Mexico, and his father had founded that town, a generation earlier. It was a big mining center, and Juan de Oñate in 1598 received a commission from the King of Spain to bring colonists north to what is now New Mexico. And to establish some colonies there and to explore the area for mineral deposits. He was hoping to find gold or maybe silver, and also to convert the native inhabitants to Christianity and bring them under, within the embrace of the Catholic Church.
So he was there for sort of God and gold, but the primary function was economic. Is that right?
I'm not sure what the price. I think it's who you ask. I think for the priests and the Pope, it was, saving souls, quote unquote. I think for Oñate, he had a vision that he would be kind of a frontier emperor and that he would found a kingdom that would exceed the glories of Mexico City and that he would establish a place for himself in history as a kind of a pioneer who, found untold wealth in this, sort of unexplored, edges of the Spanish Empire. So it depends on whose perspective you're kind of looking at.
And his father before him had been a conquistador. This was something that was sort of in his blood.
Yes, his father was Cristóbal de Oñate, and his father had come with a couple of other Spaniards to Zacatecas a generation earlier, and they had discovered silver, and it became a mining center, and his father became enormously wealthy. So Juan de Oñate was literally born with a silver spoon in his hand. And at an early age, of course, the native inhabitants around Zacatecas fiercely resented the encroachment of the Spaniards, and there were constant wars and skirmishes and things. And from the time he was probably around 12 or 13 years old, Oñate would go out on expeditions to subdue, conquer, kill, Indians who were rebellious against the Spanish crown and threatened the mining industry in the area. So he was well accustomed to warfare from a very, very early age and knew all about mines and this sort of thing.
I can only imagine the terror and the fear as these men went up and down the village, killing Acoma women and children and elders.
The Battle of Acoma was a near genocide of Acoma Pueblo. The population of Acoma being 2,000 with only 250 survivors, the streets were piled with bodies and running red with blood.
That was a clip from the film that John Valadez directed, The Last Conquistador, which will air on television on KERA Channel 13, Tuesday, July 15th at 9. Of course, that was an account of his encounter with the Acoma people in New Mexico, a tribe which still exists and is really painfully reminded of that history by this monument that was proposed in El Paso.
Yeah, and I should just a quick note, you know, I produced the film with Christina Ibarra, who is my partner in this endeavor.
Oh, thank you.
She should be mentioned, definitely. But you know, Acoma is a thriving community today, and, you know, you're not going to meet a nicer group of people, you know, a more welcoming place. And the Acoma Pueblo, which is located up on this mesa, up above this desert valley floor, is considered by some to be possibly the oldest continuously inhabited place in North America. And when Juan de Oñate came there, what had happened was the Spanish arrived in northern New Mexico, and they were ill-prepared for the harsh desert environment. And they didn't have enough food to feed their own colonists. And so what they ended up doing was kind of imposing a tax on the local Indian tribes, where they would have to give, you know, blankets or a certain amount of their grain or food to the Spaniards as a tax, because this was, in the Spaniards' mind, now Spanish land, and they were subjects to the Spanish crown. But because it's an arid, harsh environment, there's, you know, the Acoma and the other native communities were not wealthy people, and they didn't have lots of food. And so the Spanish kind of upset the food chain in the area, and there were just too many mouths to feed. And so the Acoma and many other tribes refused to hand over their food for fear that they themselves would starve. And so that was essentially, it was a battle over resources. The Spanish wanted the food. The Indians didn't want to give it up. And, you know, and conflict ensued. And at Acoma, they were almost completely wiped out. By the time Oñate finished with them, he had burned the entire village. He had taken all of the surviving children and had them sent to Mexico, where they were put on the slave market. And he took all of the surviving men and had their feet, one of their feet, chopped off. Some other Indians who happened to be from other tribes who were there, Oñate had one of their hands chopped off. And the rest of the people were put into slavery, essentially. And the aim was to have Acoma be a lesson to the other Indians that your society will be destroyed if you dare defy the Spanish crown.
So I'm curious about the legacy of Oñate in and around El Paso. I know there's a high school in Las Cruces, which is not too far away, that was relatively recently built, that's called Oñate High School. His name will appear on streets and different things. How much did people in that area really know about Oñate's entire history?
Pretty close to zero, I think is a fair guess. And that's one of the reasons why the statue was able to be built. Folks on the El Paso City Council, folks in city government, really didn't know anything about this guy. The only thing they, you know, the history of the Spanish contribution to the building of the American West, if we can call it that, is something that's generally not taught in schools, or if it is, it's just sort of glossed over. And American history in high schools and even at the college level in general, is looked at as a kind of an eastward to westward expansion. And the fact that the Spanish explored much of the American West from the plains of Kansas to the Sea of Cortez a generation before the Pilgrims even landed at Plymouth Rock is something that most people don't even know about, even people who live in the area. So when the statue was proposed, most people had either never heard of Oñate, or they just knew that he was a Spanish guy who brought the horse to North America, and that was the extent of their knowledge base.
And complicating this whole thing is the fact that most modern Mexican Americans and certainly Mexican nationals are what would be called mestizos, people who have both Indian heritage, Native American heritage, and also European heritage.
Yeah, that's correct. About 70% or so of the people who live in El Paso are mestizo, Mexican American, who trace their ancestry to both sides. We are, as Chicanos, as Mexican Americans, you know, we are the sons and daughters of that rude and violent commingling of these two identities. And when the statue was put up in El Paso, and people began to learn the history almost for the first time, really, people were filled with a lot of difficult emotions. How do you honor a founding father who is from one part of your family tree without dishonoring those who died and were murdered and raped who come from the other part of your family tree? How do you make sense of that? How do you negotiate this sort of very, you know, romantic on one hand, but very dark and miserable history on another? And it's, you know, it's held within, it's your history, but it's also held within your own biology, your own body.
And one of the people that learned this history as the process went on was the artist, John Sherrill Hauser. We have a scene here from the film where he comes up and talks to people who came to a protest and meets with them outside of this lecture that had to be canceled because it was interrupted so many times.
Did you know the history of Oñate before you took this project?
Somewhat.
You must have known that he was convicted as what could now be considered crimes against humanity. And really is considered a war criminal. Yet, you still took this project. I can't see making this huge, huge statue to somebody of that stature. We're going to hold you responsible, John Hauser, for this very offensive statue.
Well, that's...
they're doing the same thing Oñate did. The same thing. The only way it's different is because it's a different era and it's a different form of cruelty. They might not be cutting off our foot like their ancestors did. But they're hurting our hearts, and they're being cruel, and they're digging it in some more. That's all they're doing. And they don't see that they're being like him.
You know, it's really sad, because we have to be subject to that. And is it cruel to us? We continue battling. The battles are just different. It's just a different battleground. It's still the same thing.
On the other side, that was a clip from the documentary The Last Conquistador, and one of the filmmakers, John Valadez, is here. The other is Christina Ibarra, who could not join us today. John, it's really hard not to somehow empathize with the sculptor in this case, which is sort of a strange twist that we might not imagine in a piece that sets up this kind of conflict.
Well, I think we should relate to him. Because, you know, if you see the film, what the film is really about, it's about how John gets himself caught up in a kind of a moral dilemma. And he kind of builds a trap for himself that's of his own making. His father was one of the people who carved Mount Rushmore. He comes from this tradition of grand, public art. And he's a Renaissance man. He's brilliant, and art is his life. I mean, that's what he eats, sleeps, and breathes. And he got so caught up and focused on trying to create an amazing work of public art that he forgot about the social context and how that public work. You know, he was thinking about the artist's relationship to the work, but there's a bigger relationship, which is the work's relationship to the public as people see it. And he lost track of that. He lost track of the meaning of what he was doing. And ultimately, it becomes a work that embraces really kind of almost the darkest aspects of our history.
Let me stop you there, John. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is filmmaker John Valadez, who made The Last Conquistador.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is filmmaker John Valadez. Together with Christina Ibarra, he produced and directed The Last Conquistador, which will air on KERA Channel 13 as part of a PBS POV special on Tuesday, July 15th at 9. If you'd like to join our conversation today about The Last Conquistador, our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Hopefully people will see this in the film itself, John, but I'd like to step back here for a moment and ask you to describe physically the monument itself, because although it's impossible to separate what it stands for, particularly now, it really is a singularly beautiful piece of work if you sort of take out all the conflict.
Yeah, exactly. I guess if John Houser were making a statue that was life-size or that wasn't very well crafted, no one would really care. But the statue, if you go to El Paso today, it's huge. It's the size of a, five-story building, and it is exquisite. I mean, the detail, it's Juan de Oñate on top of a rearing stallion. So you have this, this huge statue being standing on two hind legs, and the work is it's glamorous, it's sexy, it's alluring, it's seductive, it's just, it makes your eyes water. It's so gosh darn good, it takes your breath away.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Tim in Dallas. Hi, Tim.
Hey, what a great program as usual. You know, this conversation to me I find very sadly ironic because, you have this situation and this figure that has been placed in effigy and all this conflict that is kind of surrounding him, and yet you just can't get the American public to get involved in a dialogue about the people that we hold so high in regard in this country that were personally responsible for the hundreds of thousands of deaths of Native Americans, all in the idea of manifest destiny in starting this country. My congratulations go out to the filmmaker, but I'm also kind of sad because I know, unfortunately, that on the larger picture, it probably won't change much in the way that most Americans view how land is taken on in the name of violence. And that's my comment.
Thanks so much for your call. What do you think about that, John?
Well, you know what? I think that it will. It starts with people taking the initiative and telling stories that they care deeply about and they think that that people ought to hear. And I think when people see the film and they see how devastated the Native American community is by this statue, and more than that, when they search their own hearts and they search their own feelings about seeing a public monument that goes up with public money, and they learn about the dark edifice upon which it is built, change begins, by little steps. And the more that people talk about these things, the more they put it out there, the more it becomes a topic of conversation, and the more it begins to seep into the American mind and into the American soul in a thoughtful way. So I think change only happens if people work towards change. There's no other way.
On the other hand, you have one academic in the film who says, look, if we held everyone that we ever, put into a monument up to the standard of being perfect, of never having made a mistake, even a serious one, we would have no monuments.
Well, that's just not true. I live in New York, or I used to live in New York City for many years, and every day I would walk by a statue in Union Square. It was of a guy named Mahatma Gandhi, and he was human and had his flaws, but the reason I think the statue of him went up is because there were certain ideals or principles that his life embodied that a lot of people felt were worthy of articulating. And right now they're building a statue on the Mall in Washington, D.C., of a guy you might have heard of him named Martin Luther King Jr. And certainly he had his flaws, as we all do, but he stood for something that inspired a lot of people and represented, I think, to many Americans, the best of who we are or who we ought to be. And if you look at, I think, a lot of public monuments, If when you use a person, you're always going to have, you know, people who are human. But I think when we put up a statue, it's usually because, or hopefully because, there was something about their life that that we felt deeply meaningful and that we would like to aspire to as well. And, you know, that may be Abraham Lincoln with the freeing of the slaves and trying to save the Union. Or it may be, you know, George Washington in trying to, you know, create, help forge a new nation and become the first president of the United States. Or, you know, it may even be Thomas Jefferson, who, yes, was a slaveholder, but we don't honor him for that. We honor him because he articulated a vision that we had not achieved as a nation, but that hopefully someday we could move towards. So, but when you look at the statue of Oñate, what are the values that that man embodies? And it's hard to find any that that you would like your children to embrace. It's hard to imagine saying to a group of young kids, you know, what he did, the way he acted, the values that he stood for, I want you to stand for those same values. It's pretty difficult. Pretty difficult argument to make once you know what this guy did.
One of the concessions that was made in trying to sort of placate the people who were so upset by the erection of the statue was that it's no longer called Juan de Oñate; it's called the Equestrian. What does that make a difference?
Well, this is the thing. I think the folks who were critical of the statue, they never wanted the statue to be called the Equestrian. That was something that the city fathers in El Paso did of their own accord so that they could try to disguise or hide who the statue is of because it's such an embarrassment. You know, that was not something that the community who was hurt by this, you know, requested. That was sort of the city trying to sidestep issues because they knew that that they had done something that was dividing people and was causing a lot of consternation and heartache. So they just tried to sweep it under the rug, basically.
And there was a lot of additional money. There was public money, and then there was also a lot of private money raised to put this thing in place. Can you talk about where that came from?
Yeah, you know, and this is really interesting. This is one of the most important points that we should remember is that, you know, the people who put up the statue are not bad people, and they didn't intend to offend anybody, and they didn't, intend to be, promote genocide. Okay, they're actually wonderful people. The way that the project came about was that, you know, El Paso is the 10th poorest city in the United States. And some of the folks in city council and some of the community leaders got together and they wanted to come up with some sort of idea that would promote the unique history of the region, would bring great art to the city, and would also promote tourism and help, promote business. And so they came up with the idea of creating 12 statues to 12 important figures who had played a role in the building of El Paso in the Southwest. And so the first one was an early missionary to the area, and the second figure was Juan de Oñate because he passed through El Paso and sort of named the region. He called it El Paso del Norte, the pass to the north. And so they felt that he was, you know, important for that reason. But because hardly anybody knew anything about the history, they didn't realize, you know, the rest of his career. So there were all these sort of wonderful motivations behind the statue going up, and the city council put in, you know, some money. Some wealthy business people in and around El Paso put in money because they thought, well, this is going to help business. It's going to help revitalize downtown, and eventually the airport put in some money because they get revenues, because of the airport, and it's public money, but they donated the ground for it to be at, and so a lot of people put in, you know, a lot into this statue without really knowing what they were building a statue of. And that's sort of the irony. It's that people were so ignorant of their own history. People were so ignorant of their own past. People were so ignorant of who they were that they ended up building a statue to a guy they knew nothing about, and it turned out to be this guy who killed a lot of people and caused a lot of trouble. And I should just mention one more quick thing, is that Oñate was actually recalled by the King of Spain and put on trial for what we would now call crimes against humanity because his treatment of Native Americans was so brutal. And he was convicted. And the convictions, you know, still stand to this day. And the King of Spain banished him from New Mexico for the rest of his life.
And he spent the rest of his life sort of trying to clear his name unsuccessfully.
Right. Well, what he tried and tried and tried and tried for the rest of his life, and he ended up getting some of the penalties against him reduced, but he was never exonerated.
Well, one of the starkest transformations in the film does come, again, from the greatest champion of the monument, which is the sculptor John Hauser. We'll hear him now reflecting on the project after the sculpture is finally completed.
I didn't realize the power of art, to tell you the truth, until this statue was done, and I began to see what kind of response people had to it. And I began to realize that art does have a power.
Hold it right there.
And with that power comes responsibility. The inhumanity of that period was unrecognized by the perpetuators of those crimes. And we blotted out in the same way that Oñate did. That there was a certain blindness in the society of that time, and that blindness is still with us today. I had neglected the depth of the injury that he had done in history to the Native American people. And at that point now, it's too late to rectify. It's a suffering for me, too, to have to carry this, because it's not what I intended people to get out of this work. But it's something I think that I should have been able to anticipate, and I didn't. I'm sorry.
We hear there a genuinely contrite sculptor, John Hauser, in the film The Last Conquistador, which will air on Tuesday, July 15th at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television. The filmmaker, one of the filmmakers, John Valadez, is with us. I guess the important question here, John, is, you know, we hear this sort of a moment of redemption from John Hauser. Do the other people who supported the monument, have they made that sort of step as well? Or are they still in a place where they're outraged that people don't simply look at the statue for the beauty of what it is and stop raising a fuss over the horrible memories that it drums up?
You know, out of all of the people who supported this project, and it pains me to say this, John Hauser is the only person who has stepped forward to apologize and say that he should have maybe conceptualized things from the very beginning a little differently. Nobody else, not the folks in city government, not the mayor of El Paso, not the 12 Travelers Committee, which was the fundraising committee, not the wealthy merchants and those who walk the corridors of power in El Paso. None of them have spoken to me or issued anything like a statement of contrition or apology or regret at all. Even knowing all that everybody knows now, that the cat's out of the bag and we know exactly who Oñate is and what he stood for, they are unwilling to back down, give an inch, admit one iota that they did anything, you know, wrong at all. And they stand firmly 100% behind the statue. And I think if they had their way, there would be probably more statues of conquistadors up all across the West.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Martin in Bald Springs. Hi, Martin.
Hi, I'm Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to ask the filmmaker that instead of building a statue for Oñate, the conquistador, why wasn't there a statue built to honor the achievements of indigenous peoples in El Paso? Because, of course, they were there before Oñate.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's a darn good question. As part of the 12 travelers concept, there are more than one statue, you know, are of Native Americans, but they only got the statue number 2, and it was Oñate. And it was so big that it just kind of, you know, blew everything out of the water. I mean, I told John, you know, the first statue should have been to somebody like Benito Juarez, you know, a Native American who rose to be, you know, president of Mexico, and who Juarez, the town right across the Rio Grande from El Paso, is named after him. Or it could have been the Manso Indians, who were the Native Americans who lived in the El Paso area but are now extinct. You know, maybe we should remember them.
The
question is who decides what monuments go in the public square? Who decides the images that will define our community and will define the kinds of values that our community stands for? And more often than not, it's, you know, it's people who have power. And they may not, Native Americans may not be on their mind.
Filmmaker John Valadez is my guest. Together with Christina Ibarra, he produced and directed The Last Conquistador, which will air on KERA Channel 13 television at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, July 15th. You can join our conversation after the break by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, creativity and curiosity, sharp. Details online at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is filmmaker John Valadez. He produced and directed, along with Christina Ibarra, The Last Conquistador, which will air on KERA TV on Tuesday, July 15th at 9. We also have a screening here at the KERA studios on Thursday, that's tomorrow night, at 6:30. You can RSVP to that at the station, and you can find information if you call the station. 1-800-933-5372 is the telephone number to call the show and participate in the discussion. You know, the 12 travelers is interesting, John, as a basis for this. People have been bickering about who they should be and how they should be funded for the better part of two decades. It's funny that there still wasn't a greater amount of research before the decision was made about making Juan de Oñate the second of the 12 travelers.
Yeah, well, you know, you can say that ignorance is bliss, I guess, until you find out the truth. You see, there was a conceptual problem, I think, with the 12 travelers from the beginning that that folks didn't really realize. And that is that they were going to take 12 historical figures who played an important role in the shaping of El Paso, and they were supposed to be sort of monikers of a certain period, of different periods in history. And they were supposed to be sort of kind of like neutral chapter headings. But, you know, when you make a work of public art, it's never neutral. Who you decide to depict is a loaded question. How big the statue is a loaded question. How they're presented, you know, is a loaded question. And whenever somebody, the public, then begins to look at the art, you begin to reflect upon what values that person stood for. And, as we were making the film, something occurred to me that, you know, bronze, a bronze statue lasts probably at least 1,000 years. I mean, that's how long this statue will stand unless somebody takes it down. And so, you know, my children's 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 children, you know, may one day go to El Paso and look upon this statue and think, wow, this must have been a great man. It must have been a man of vision, of fortitude, a man of destiny who shaped the building of the American West and who shaped history and destiny. And it is probably a statue of a man to be greatly admired because it's so big and so exquisitely crafted. And that kid or kids may begin to think that, well, you know, maybe in life you need to break a few eggs to make an omelet. You know, maybe you have to, maybe you have to do some dark things in order to achieve a greater end. And maybe they will become inspired by that. And maybe they will want to follow in Juan de Oñate's footsteps because we as a culture are telling them that that's what they ought to do by making such a magnificent and glorious representation of this person. And the thought of that should give everybody, Indian or not, pause and cause for sober reflection and soul searching, in my opinion.
It is an interesting point about the nature of public art, because you're right. By virtue of the fact that it's displayed publicly and it's sort of put out there, we make the assumption, correctly or not, that the person is someone to be honored, whereas you could look at something in a museum or elsewhere, and there are certainly nefarious characters that are depicted in art all the time and have been throughout history, and somehow we don't assume that these are meant to be models for our own behavior.
Well, it's a little different. You see, you know, Oñate, the statue of him was put up because he passed through El Paso, right, going north on his journey north. But he, you know, you can depict people in different ways. You know, Oñate passed through El Paso twice. The second time he was returning to Mexico City because the king had recalled him and was going to put him on trial. So it could have been a statue of Oñate, but it could have been a beleaguered Oñate who is facing judgment by the king of Spain for the crimes that he had committed, you know, in this new frontier. It could have been an Oñate who was searching his soul and who had been defeated by his own hubris and his own desire to achieve greatness. I mean, it could have been a tragic Oñate that was depicted, but the artist chose to depict instead Oñate at the height of his power, and if you look at the statue, Oñate's on a rearing steed, as I said before, and in one hand he's holding a piece of paper, and that piece of paper is called La Toma. And what La Toma is, in Spanish, tomar, the verb tomar, means to take. And that document represents the taking of the West for the King of Spain and for the Pope. It is the legal document that justified the subjugation of all people and all land who lived in that area. And so that's what it honors. You could have made Oñate with a grotesque or distorted face, and the meaning of the statue would have been different. There are so many ways you can approach the art to give it a different spin or to embody, a mood of irony or contradiction or, there's so many different approaches. But the artist chose this approach, which is a statement in and of itself.
Let's go next to Stephen in Dallas. Hi, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning. And I would first like to say that I want to congratulate John on his eloquence and artistry and his contributions to a greater awareness of the American West, or what we call the American West. And for several years, I was working there with one of the museums belonging to the city of El Paso, and the controversy was very well known even in the 90s when this was being projected. And in many cases, I think John might be able to comment a little bit more on this. As he had said earlier, it was falling on deaf ears. And those of us in the know, and we share many different friends, one, Gaspar Enriquez, a good friend of John's, I would like to know if John feels that by this airing and this movie, the people of southern New Mexico or New Mexico at large and West Texas and Arizona can come to terms with their identity and their future. It's a very important rift that still exists.
Thanks so much for your call. What do you think, John?
Yeah, there's a very strange phenomenon, and this is, I think, one of the themes of the film. And it's that we as human beings have a tendency or have a remarkable ability to engage in a kind of willful blindness where we see only what we want to see. We cherry pick facts that suit our own worldview, and we discard those that are inconvenient or do not further the argument that we are trying to make. And we all do this, and it's in every province of our lives. But the Oñate statue is particularly perplexing because the stakes are so high. I mean, we're literally talking about the man who, among other things, was the first European to bring genocide to North America. And that is just really, really, Americans ought to find that deeply, deeply troubling and disturbing. But if you talk to supporters of the statue, you know, we made this film over 7 years, and they would not talk about, you know, sort of the darker, more brutal aspects of Oñate's career. It was all, you know, upbeat and all the wonderful things he did without, exploring the equally dramatic, more brutal aspects of who he was. It's very odd and very human.
Is there some value to the fact, John, that certainly due to the film, but even due to the great deal of coverage that we've seen nationally over this issue, that at least, if nothing else, people in El Paso and in southern New Mexico do understand this element of their history that almost didn't exist for them? Oñate was simply, you know, almost a cartoon figure before.
Yeah, that's true. I think the statue has definitely attracted a lot of attention to a history that was unknown. But, you know, we're all to blame, for so long. And I remember growing up, you know, and I'm Mexican-American. It's like Mexican-Americans are, you know, our participation in this country was never valued or given any kind of, you know, recognition. And so what happens over time is people get frustrated and they get pent up. And when they have an opportunity to build a statue to a Hispanic personage, they're like, oh, yes, finally, you know, let's go for it. We can have our own statue. And they begin to embrace that, even though that particular person may not be the best representative for what we have done or for the kinds of values that our community holds dear. So it's, you know, there's a lot of it. It's complicated. And there's just sort of this accreted, frustration on all sides that has just been building and building for so, so long. You know, Hispanic people feel left out of the conversation. That's part of the reason why the statue went up. And Indian people certainly feel left out of the conversation. I mean, you can't, you know, if there's any group that's been, I can't think of a group that's been treated worse in American history. You know, so it's, we all bear that cross.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Brent in Sherman. Hey, Brent.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, can public art include an implied dialogue among the statues or among the characters of the time? For instance, you know, we've got this statue of Oñate, and in many people's views, he's a very negative figure. But could you have other statues who represent the other point of views and, you know, how they would respond to his character? And I'll take my answer off the phone.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, I think that would be a great solution. People have said to me, well, maybe they should just tear down the statue, and I would be very much against that, because it represents a decision that a community made for ill or good, Once upon a time, and that community needs to be reminded of that decision that they made, and need to, never shirk or run from it. And if it's painful, well, it's the pain that they chose. But altering the site where the statue is in some way so that it would reflect the complexity of the history and would reflect the pain and anguish of Oñate's foray into New Mexico in some manner might be a really, really, really interesting solution that might help in the healing process. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. If you go to El Paso today and you go look at the statue, there's not even a plaque that explains who he is or what he did or didn't do. His name isn't even on the statue. It's almost as though the city fathers of and mothers of El Paso are trying to pretend that this towering figure that casts this long shadow across their community doesn't even exist. They're trying to avoid discussion or acknowledgement of it in some way.
That's really a chilling metaphor for what happened in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it seems so simple that knowledge and constructive and thoughtful discourse is illuminating, and the avoidance of knowledge and history and thoughtful discourse puts you in the dark ages. It seems so obvious, and yet to so many people in the Southwest, that doesn't seem like a very enticing option.
There was a smaller, completely unrelated statue of Oñate in, I guess it was in Taos, that was vandalized. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, not in Taos. It was in another community, but not far from there. There was a statue of Oñate. It was a life size, and a number of years ago, some people came and removed one of the feet of the statue. And as a reminder of what Oñate had done to people who had lived around that area, once upon a time. And I don't know, I thought that was pretty poetic. And I thought that in a sense, some people called it vandalism, but I almost thought that taking off the foot of that statue was in itself a kind of performance art that was pretty interesting and eye-opening.
And it was ultimately repaired, but there's always going to be that seam there, so that it'll never be without that marker of what happened.
Right.
You can see John Valadez's documentary, The Last Conquistador, Tuesday night, July 15th at 9. There's also a screening event tomorrow at the KERA studios. You can call the studios to find out more about that. John, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you, and you can go to thelastconquistador.com to find out more about Oñate and more about the film.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.